The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 12, text number 26, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 8th, 2009, in Sydney, Australia.
So today, we have been blessed by the special mercy of the Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Nandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, with the opportunity to study the 4th canto, chapter 12, text number 26 of the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Anatishtam te pitribir.
Anatishtam te pitribir.
Anyayat yangakar hichit.
Anyayat yangakar
hichit. Atishta jagatam vandyam.
Anishta jagatam vandyam.
Vishnu paramam padam.
Tad Vishnu paramam padam.
Anatishtam te pitribir.
Anatishtam te pitribir.
Anyairapi yangakar hichit.
Anyairapi yangakar hichit.
Anishta jagatam vandyam.
Anishta jagatam vandyam.
Vishnu paramam padam.
Tad Vishnu paramam padam.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Sri Nandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada.
My dear King Dhruva, neither your forefathers nor anyone else before you ever achieved such a transcendental planet. The planet known as Vishnu Loka, where Lord Vishnu personally resides, is the highest of all. It is worshipable by the inhabitants of all other planets within the universe. Please come with us and live there eternally. When Dhruva Maharaj went to perform austerities, he was very determined to achieve a post never dreamed of by his forefathers. His father was Uttanapada, his grandfather was Manu, and his great-grandfather was Lord Brahma. So Dhruva wanted a kingdom even greater than Lord Brahma could achieve. He requested Narada Muni to give him facility for achieving it. The associates of Lord Vishnu reminded him that not only his forefathers, but everyone else before him was unable to attain Vishnu Loka, the planet where Lord Vishnu resides. This is because everyone within this material world is either a karmi, a jnani, or a yogi. But there are hardly any pure devotees. The transcendental planet known as Vishnu Loka is especially meant for devotees, not for karmis, jnanis, or yogis. Great rishis or demigods can hardly approach Brahmaloka. As it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmaloka is not a permanent residence. Lord Brahma's duration of life is so long and that it is difficult to estimate even the duration of one day in his life. And yet Lord Brahma also dies, as do the residents of his planet. Bhagavad Gita 8.16 says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartin Arjuna. Except for those who go to Vishnu Loka, everyone is subjected to the four principles of material life, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. The Lord says, Yad gatva nidivartante tadama paramang mama. The planet from which once going, no one returns, is my supreme abode. Bhagavad Gita 15:6. Dhruva Maharaj was reminded, you are going in our company to that planet from which no one returns to this material world. Material scientists are attempting to go to the moon and other planets. But they cannot imagine going to the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, for it is beyond their imagination. By material calculation, traveling at the speed of light, it would take 40,000 years to reach the topmost planet. By mechanical processes, we are unable to reach the topmost planet of the universe. But the process called Bhakti Yoga, as executed by Maharaj Dhruva, can give one facility not only to reach other planets within this universe, but also to reach beyond this universe to the Vishnu Loka planets. We have outlined this in our small booklet, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala back in, you know, the 50s, she was saying that this space program was ridiculous. Prabhupada makes this point again and again and again. Even if they go to the moon, even if they can go to Mars, they can't reach Brahmaloka, what to speak of Vishnu. So why all this expenditure? Waste of time and energy. It's the lording it over mentality. You know, they wanted to get to the moon to plant the American flag. We colonized this. This is now American territory. What these rascals will accomplish. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantam vichyati. Krishna is the supreme proprietor. Can they become the proprietor by planting the American flag on the moon? It becomes their property now. See, this is our madness. We enter this world with nothing. We leave this world with nothing in the middle we come and claim mine. We see this even in little children. See? They have their favorite toy, mine. We were preaching in one home, and they had spoiled their child by letting him watch cartoons on television. He was absolutely addicted to cartoons. His brain had become like a noodle brain from watching too many Roadrunner and Daffy Duck cartoons. But anyway, the point is, I just happened to sit down on the couch in the living room, and he went into a tantrum. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, I just sat on the couch, and the kid is flipping out. But then I realized that was his spot where he would watch TV from, you see. That was his cartoon-watching asana. And I just happened to sit on his cartoon-watching asana. He was the king, you see. The king of the cartoons watching business. So even a little child, you know, that is my asana. You see. He was absolutely angry. You know, I would sit on his asana that he watched the Roadrunner film. So even a little child, you see, this lording over mentality is there. My seat. So, as we grow older, we get more and more contaminated, actually. You see, we're more or less innocent as little children. Of course, there is some karma and residue from previous lifetimes. But compared to adult life, we are very innocent as children. But even in little children, we see this tendency, lording it over the tendency. So, as the years go by, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And this space program is just a lording it over mood. That's all it is. They want to lord it over. And because they want to lord it over, it's very difficult for them to transfer themselves to other planet. In other words, if you're in a river, you know, you're in a canoe in a river, okay? If you go with the current, it's easy. You can probably just glide along, you know, with no endeavor. Maybe steer the canoe a little bit. That's about it. The current will carry you. If you try to go against the current, it's very, very difficult. So, when we try to lord it over the material nature, we are going against the current, the current of Krishna's energy, you understand? When you flow with the spiritual energy, then it's very easy. But when you get into that material energy, it means you're trying to go against the spiritual energy. The actual powerful flow is the spiritual energy, not the material energy. So their attempts to lord it over by the space program is going against the laws of God. Instead of harmonizing with God's law, they're trying to challenge them. You understand? And therefore, it's very, very difficult. It's very expensive. And it's even questionable. Many people have made exposés to show the whole thing was a fraud. It's a big controversy, of course. But it's, you know, what are they accomplishing? But if one actually goes with the flow, you see, harmonizes with Krishna, then you can easily transfer yourself to any planet. You can even go beyond the intensely thick coverings of the universe. It's amazing how thick they are. Each one is 10 times thicker than the previous. We're talking millions and billions of miles of coverings on the outer shell of the universe. And then once you get there, you're still in the material cosmos. You have to get to the, after going beyond all the material universes, then you have to come to the Viraja River. And you have to cross the Viraja. So to try to do this thing mechanically, it's insane to try to mechanically do that in defiance of the laws of God. They'll never be successful. Absolutely not, impossible. But for one who harmonizes, you see, with Krishna, you can't beat him, join him. You see? It's just an intelligent thing to do. Even in warfare, if your enemy is too powerful, you might as well just surrender. You know, if you can't beat him, join him. So here we have, Krishna is not our enemy, of course. We think he's that. We position ourselves in an inimical position. That's the foolishness. You know, denying his existence as atheists. You see? That is our foolishness as a human civilization. We try to challenge God. Like that one king in the Krishna book. He wanted to challenge Krishna that I am the real Supreme Lord, not you. He got annihilated pretty quickly. So we should wake up and realize, hey, you know, I'm not really God after all. I thought I was, but I really now realize that I'm not the Supreme. The universe doesn't really revolve around me. I'm not really the center of existence. I'm simply a part of that Supreme Person. I am not the Supreme Person himself. So when one wakes up, one humbles oneself, and one realizes, I'm just part of that Supreme Person. I'm part of his expanded energy. So therefore, let me fulfill my role that he wants me to play in his existence, of being his servant. You see, that word nowadays, it's considered, it has a bad taste. People think servant is a bad thing. Being a servant is, you know, for people who are destitute. They get a job as a servant somewhere, you know, because they're destitute, low class. If you're high class and you're a master, low class is a servant. But actually, it's just the opposite. The more you become servant of the 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 servant, that is your exalted position. So this Krishna consciousness philosophy is just the opposite of the material philosophy. That's why so few people are able to comprehend it, but to speak of apply it. So the first step is to comprehend it. That's why we probably want us to have this class every morning on the Srimad Bhagavatam. You see? Because the first thing is we have to actually understand what is this philosophy. You don't understand it, I mean, how in the world could you ever apply it? It wouldn't even be possible to apply it. So the first thing is to get a crystal clear understanding of what exactly is this philosophy, you see. And when that understanding is very clear, then you can actually manifest it in a practical way in your thoughts, your words, your deeds, in all times, all places, in all circumstances. And when you do that, you become a living embodiment of the Bhagavatam. And by your association, other people will become devotees. This is the idea, you see. Imbibe the Bhagavatam by hearing. Take it into your heart. Understand what it is. Understand what it means. To follow the Bhagavatam, to live the Bhagavatam, to live the Bhagavatam, to breathe the Bhagavatam, you see. Get this deep within your heart. And then manifest it in all of your dealings, all of your relationships, in all situations. And if you do that, you'll become a powerful spiritual revolutionary. You can change the world. The Bhagavatam is stated that it is meant for revolutionizing the human society. So how will that happen? That will happen by when people read it and they become manifestations of the Bhagavatam themselves by their demeanor, by their words, and by their activities. The more we can have persons Bhagavatam walking around Sydney, you see, walking around Australia, walking around this planet, the more we have persons, Bhagavatams, who are living embodiment of these teachings, who are living embodiments of these teachings, then we will see this whole human society becoming transformed and uplifted. We will see the prediction of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami coming true before our very eyes. You know that prediction? Satjana durjana pangu jadda anagana prema vanyaya nubaila jagatera jana. He said that this Krishna consciousness movement is a prema tsunami. Prema vanyaya. It is a tidal wave of love of God. And he says this tidal wave, this tsunami, it will inundate the entire world, drowning everyone, whether they are lame, invalid, blind, pious, impious, it doesn't matter what they are, everyone will be drowned in this prema vanyaya, this tsunami of Krishna bhakti. So, how do we make it happen? It's simple. Become a living embodiment of the Bhagavatam, yourself, you see. That's the easy thing. We have to. The revolution begins right here. The way to revolutionize this planet is to revolutionize your own consciousness. You see, embrace the mood of pure bhakti. It's good for the world. And it's good for you also. Why? Ahaitakiya pratiyata yayatma supersedati. Unless your heart is full of pure bhakti, 24 hours a day, you're not going to be fully satisfied. Bhagavatam says, you will not be satisfied. Your mind will be agitated. I'm telling you the facts. Your mind will be agitated unless you develop this spirit of pure bhakti. Ahaitakiya pratiyata. Bhagavatam says, this is the only way that you can be satisfied. To have this mood of unmotivated, uninterrupted bhakti, 24 hours a day, that means pure bhakti. If we're not pure devotees, our minds are going to be disturbed. So who likes to have a disturbed mind? I don't. I can't stand it. I hate it. There's nothing worse than having a disturbed mind. If your mind is disturbed, even if everything is okay, just by your mind you'll suffer. Even if everything is actually okay, there's nothing wrong, but if your mind is disturbed, then even if everything is nice, you'll still be unhappy. You could have a nice house, a nice car, a nice wife, nice kids, a refrigerator full of food, a good job, plenty of money in the bank, but if your mind is disturbed, what good is it? It's useless. And if you have none of those things, if your mind is peaceful, then you're okay. So the real thing is you have to have peace of mind. The real thing. Krishna says, how can there be happiness without peace of mind? Bhagavad Gita says. So there must be peace of mind. And Bhagavatam says, you will not have peace of mind unless you have ahaitaki apratiyata bhakti. So, do you think it's in our self-interest that we try to cultivate this pure bhakti movement? You're darn right it is. This is the number one thing we should be thinking about every day. I have to cultivate pure bhakti. That's the only way I'm going to really be happy. Sometimes we see, well, I joined the Hare Krishna movement and now my endeavor is to position myself in the society, you know, become a well-respected devotee, get some position, and that's my happiness. No. Not that, well, if everybody appreciates me, well, Prabhu, you know, we really appreciate you're a wonderful devotee, you know, you're compassionate, you're intelligent, you do your service first class. Is that our perfection? No. Simply to please the devotees that were serving nicely, that is not enough. We've seen many devotees who were doing great service. We thought they were wonderful devotees, but one day they disappeared. They went back to the material world. So simply to be a well-respected man or woman in ISKCON is not enough. Not enough. We have to develop pure devotional service. That's the only safe position. A pure bhakti. Only safe position. So how do we get it? We have to take the dust from Prabhupada's feet. The greatest pure devotee in the history of the universe. Here we are seated at his lotus feet. We just have to get some of that dust, that pure bhakti dust from Prabhupada's lotus feet. Yeah. Smear our whole consciousness with the dust from Prabhupada's feet. This is how we'll get it. You can only get pure bhakti by the mercy of a pure devotee. You can't get it by karma, jnana, or yoga. You can only get it. It's a gift bestowed by a pure devotee. It's the only way you can get it. So we have to beg Prabhupada for his mercy. Please bestow upon me Krishna prema. Please, Srila Prabhupada, bless me with pure devotional service. Save me from this wretched, hellish mentality of trying to lord it over, trying to be the enjoyer, you see. How many times do we try to be the enjoyers and then get frustrated in our attempt to be the enjoyer? Even within Krishna consciousness, our neophyte Krishna consciousness. Again and again, well, I'm really going to enjoy this feast, and then we overeat and get sick. How many times do we get frustrated by this enjoying? The real key is always be in the mood of servant. Serve Krishna, serve Srila Prabhupada, serve your spiritual master, serve the Vaishnavas, and serve the world by giving them Krishna consciousness. If we are always in this mood, I want to serve, then we will actually enjoy it. We'll never be unhappy. Because there's unlimited service available here. If we want service, then we will never be unhappy in any circumstance. Never be unhappy. So we simply have to kick out this enjoying mood. This is not good for me. Why? Because I suffer. To want to enjoy it, that's all right. But one should know how to enjoy it. That is intelligent. One should know that by being in the mood of, always being in the mood of service, that's how I'll enjoy unlimitedly. You see, the intelligent person, the person who is in the know, as they say, doesn't try to be the enjoyer. He tries to always position himself as the servant. And by doing so, and becoming more and more and more expert in being the servant, that person, he or she, enters into a dimension of unlimited bliss. That's what I'm saying is confirmed in the nectar of devotion. Sit up. You don't need to lean like that. You're not an old man. You're a young man, strong. Fuerte. So, it is confirmed in the nectar devotion. Pure devotional service gives one transcendental bliss. It's the beginning of all auspiciousness. It completely It puts an end to all material distress. These things are confirmed right there in the beginning of the nectar devotion. So if we cultivate this mood of pure devotional service seriously, then we're going to taste some pretty serious bliss also. And that bliss will get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Just imagine a gulab jamun. Then when you put it in your mouth, it just becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. It never ends. It's the eternal gulab jamun. You get to eat that gulab jamun for all of eternity. You never get filled up. You always have a strong appetite, and you just in relishing that gulab jamun, and it's unlimited. You see, that's Krishna consciousness. It's the unlimited gulab jamun. And that gulab jamun has so much juice, it will squirt out and inundate the whole universe. You see, that is Krishna consciousness movement. So the way we can actually enter into this consciousness where it's like eating the unlimitedly sweet gulab jamun at every second, you see, that's pure bhakti. Cultivate the pure bhakti. Give up, you know, trying to gain some, I want to be recognized. I want to be respected by as many devotees as possible because it gratifies me. You won't have a taste for the holy name. If we're in that mood, we won't have a taste for the holy name. Lord Chaitanya says, if you're in the mood of giving all respect to others without expecting any respect for yourself, then you can taste unlimited nectar when you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama
Hare
Hare.
So we should take hint from these, all of these directions that Lord Chaitanya is giving in his Shikshasaka. And we had a wonderful weekend in Govinda Valley. It was a benediction moon retreat. We just focused on Lord Chaitanya. We actually did an intensive study of the Shikshasaka. That was practically the whole weekend. We just dove into those eight prayers, deep, deep, deep into those eight prayers, and looked at the inner meanings of all those different prayers of Shikshasaka. A whole weekend was studying the Shikshasaka. And it's just amazing to see how Lord Chaitanya is giving us everything we need to know in those eight prayers of how to taste unlimited nectar every second, as he says, to enable us to taste that nectar for which we are hankering for it every second. You see, we keep thinking it's somewhere else. Well, maybe it's a pretty girl, maybe it's money, maybe it's this, maybe we keep getting diverted again and again and again. But actually, all we really want, all we really need, is that pure bhakti. That's all we really need. It's really all we need. Nothing else is required. You see? So if we develop this mood, then we'll be able to follow in the footsteps of King Dhruva. How did he achieve it? By this mood of pure bhakti, you see. He was mistaken in the beginning. He was wanting some material position. But because he had a great good fortune and the mercy of Narada Muni, he got the darshan of the Lord anyway. But then instantly he realized the foolishness of his endeavor to want to have some position in the material existence. And he became a pure devotee by the darshan of the Lord. Garbo... So in this way, let us follow this pathway of pure bhakti that is given to us by Dhruva Maharaj and qualify ourselves to enter into the transcendental existence. So I can ask now if there's some questions. I'm somewhat deaf, so speak loudly and clearly.
Prabhu, you said we have to get the dust. Is there an etiquette about how to approach?
Well, actually, there's thousands of ways to get the dust from Prabhupada's feet. One easy way to do it is when you put the flowers. Just kind of when you're putting the flowers there, give him the flowers and take a little. Touch his foot at the same time you're putting the flower. That's a nice, appropriate time to do it. And then put it on your head. That's one way to do it. And then another way is when those flowers, you know, every day they remove those flowers that were sitting in his feet. And those flowers are loaded with his dust, his foot dust. Take those flowers and keep them with you for some time. Those flowers have the dust. And then, of course, By his, the dust is fully, even more powerfully present in the orders that he has given. Chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulated principles. Cooperate with the devotees of ISKCON for creating a spiritual revolution on this planet, to bless all the fallen conditioned souls of this world. By embracing the orders, you see, that is where the dust is most powerfully manifested, in the orders of Srila Prabhupada, which his books are just full of. Open the books, read the books, follow the books. Then you'll be saturated with that dust. And by finding devotees who are fully absorbed in the dust of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, and getting their dust. You see, that's also good. Find a follower of Srila Prabhupada. This is why Prabhupada said that after I depart, then the new devotees should become disciples of my disciples. The idea was that they would transmit that dust also. You see. Those who are purely following Srila Prabhupada, they can pass on that mercy they have gotten from him to others. The mercy does not diminish by being passed through the line of succession. Actually, the mercy increases. Prabhupada said that the grandfather is more merciful than the father. So when you get the grandfather's mercy, you see, you actually becomes more powerful for the grand disciple. Prabhupada said the grand disciple actually gets more mercy than the disciple. Because he's in a more humble position. Instead of being directly the servant, he's the servant of the servant. You see. Instead of being the disciple, he's the disciple of the disciple. That puts him in a position to get even more mercy. It's confirmed by Srila Prabhupada. So everyone has that access. The devotees now who are getting Prabhupada's mercy in that way, they're getting even more mercy. According to Srila Prabhupada, they get more mercy than the direct servant. So everyone has that access to getting Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada's mercy is more available now than it was previously. That's the point is, according to what Prabhupada said, the mercy is even more available now than it was previously. It's increased. You see. And Prabhupada... there's another example. Maybe I can ask another question. Yeah.
This is about respect from the devotees for the position, but there's also the aspect...
What did he say?
Respect from the devotees for position. You feel that you should get respect from the devotees.
Now, for one's service, actually, of course, for the sake of one's service, to do one's service successfully, then you do need to be respected, and that's a fact. Just like as a traveling preacher, spiritual master, I try to, I know that if I'm respected, then it helps me to do my service better. So to desire respect for the sake of doing one's service is not wrong.
Move trying to please the devotees and have them happy with you.
That's the going the other way. I'm giving respect to them, you see. That's Lord Chaitanya says, you be in the mood of giving respect to them, not in the mood of trying to get respect out of them. You see. So, but of course, the insider secret is the more you respect others, the more they'll respect you. I mean, that's really... That devotee who doesn't want any respect for himself, but just wants to give all respect to others, he becomes the most respected devotee. So you don't lose by being in the mood of giving respect. What did Lord Jesus say? He said, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." So the more we give respect, the more we get respect. That's a fact. So if you want to be respected, well, just give respect to everybody. Learn, bow down to every devotee. If not in physically to every devotee, at least in your heart at least, in the way you deal with them, in a bowed down mood. See? Of course, we do have every day, we bow down to all the devotees during the morning program, Mantra Kalpataru. It used to be, though, that was instituted later on. I remember in the old days, we didn't do the Vanchakalpa prayers in the morning. I had one godbrother, one of my dearmost godbrothers, Balabhadra Bhattacharya Prabhu. Every morning, he would individually bow down to every Brahmin in the temple. We had many second initiates. But that was his morning, part of his morning sadhana. He would individually offer obeisances to each and every second initiated devotee in the temple. Every morning, that was part of his sadhana. That was his breath. So this mood of actually bowing down and offering respects to Vaishnavas, this endears us to Krishna. Because he says, the one who is my devotee, ye me bhaktasjana parata, na me bhaktasjate janaha. He is not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So how much are we devoted to the devotee? We should honestly assess our own hearts. How much am I devoted to the devotees? They think, oh yeah, they're just... Are we finding fault with them, or are we actually feeling devoted to them? We should feel devotion to the devotees, because that's the only way that Krishna will accept us. We have to cultivate that mood of feeling devoted to Krishna's devotees. Now we got about 1 minute. Any other quick question? Everybody's fully satisfied? Yes.
So, speaking to someone, he said, the Chinese whisper, you start from something and you end up with something else. It doesn't work. You start with one word, A, you can end up with, say, C or D at the end. So how do you prove that this simple translation is coming from thousands of your words?
So, can you summarize? I cut half of it. You're saying that
example of...
Why don't you come and just tell me here? Yeah.
In Chinese whisper, you start from person A, you say something to him, and he says to B.
China, they call it the Chinese whisper?
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, you say something to you. And
yeah,
you say
we used to play that game in America, the kids game, you know.
Yeah.
We had a different name for it. Okay, yeah. So how do we know that a specific possession is genuine?
Because they say it's been passing through from thousands of years, maybe.
How do we know it's not changed? This is Vai. The Bhagavad Gita was put into writing 5,000 years ago. We know the Bhagavad Gita hasn't been changed. It was dictated by Vyasadeva to the whole Mahabharata, actually, including the Bhagavad Gita, was dictated. Ganesh took the dictation. He put it in writing. So we have the of course, and it was, you know, that manuscript was copied. So how do we know that they didn't make mistakes when they copied the manuscript also? Someone changed it along the way. Well, we have a three-way check and balance system. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. How do we know the Shastra is bona fide? How it wasn't changed? That's from the perfect self-realized being, the fully enlightened spiritual master. From him, we know. He confirms it. Prabhupada has confirmed it. These are bona fide scriptures. Prabhupada doesn't depend. Of course, he does and he doesn't depend. He does depend on the message coming down from the Parampara. But at the same time, Prabhupada has a direct connection with Krishna. So Prabhupada is able to confirm, he has his connection with his spiritual master. He can confirm the message, the Bhagavatam message, by his own spiritual master saying that it's bona fide. And he can also confirm it by his own direct experience of Krishna. You see? The fully self-realized soul, you can see Krishna face to face, eye to eye at every minute. Prabhupada personally instructed me. He said, if you will simply engage in pure devotional service 24 hours a day with full sincerity of attitude, then Krishna will personally come and answer all of your questions. So if you have Krishna right there, you can say, well, Krishna, He can ask Krishna, and he'll tell you. Krishna, is the Bhagavad Gita as it is bona fide? Or did it get, is this tampered with? You see, and Krishna can directly say, no, it's bona fide. Every syllable is perfect. See, the pure devotee, he has direct contact with Krishna. Krishna can answer every question. So there's no doubt for the pure devotee. So Prabhupada was such a pure devotee who had direct contact with Krishna. They confirm everything. Prabhupada even stated that Krishna helped him write the purport to the fifth canto, because he didn't, it was beyond his comprehension, the Vedic cosmology. But Prabhupada said Krishna helped him to write the purport. So for a pure devotee, he has direct contact with Krishna. And so there's no question. Now, if one thinks, well, is Prabhupada really telling us the truth? And that's another matter. But if you accept the honesty of Srila Prabhupada, then there's no, then on his word alone, you can accept everything. That's what we do. If you went in the U.S. and took a survey on the street, do you believe in God? Most people in the U.S. would say yes. And then you say, my dear sir, if I told you that God is a little blue cowherd boy, he wears a yellow silk dhoti and a peacock feather in his hair, and he plays a flute standing in the bushes on the bank of the River Jamuna in the moonlit night, what would you say to that? He'd say, I'm calling the police. There's a nut on the street. He escaped from a mental asylum. So how did Prabhupada convince him? See, if you're from India, that's another thing. That's your culture, but you know, that's not our American culture. Where I grew up, that wasn't considered God. So how did Prabhupada convince him? We were convinced because of Prabhupada's character. We had never met such a saintly person, such a pure-hearted soul. So we accepted on Prabhupada's word that all of these things are true. So we know because Prabhupada said it. That's how we know. Now, if one says, well, how do you know Prabhupada is bona fide? Well, there's a simple way you can find out whether Prabhupada is bona fide or not. Follow his instructions and see if you get the result. Prabhupada says if you will follow these instructions, then you will also be in face-to-face contact with Krishna. You'll be able to... In fact, Prabhupada ordered me like that. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face-to-face. So, you doubt whether it's Prabhupada bona fide or is Prabhupada just making all this up? Well, follow him. He's giving the recipe that you can also come directly face-to-face with God and become, you know, have that same connection with God that he has. Well, then try it. And see if it works. Fully embrace the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. And then you'll find out whether it's bona fide or not. When you meet Krishna face to face, eye to eye, and you can ask him any question you want about anything, then you know Prabhupada is telling the truth. You know absolutely he was telling the truth. So if you want to know beyond any shadow of a doubt, just become a pure devotee, Prabhu. And then you'll become perfect in realization. What does Gita say? Gyanena tu tad agyanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham madityam vajyanam prakashayati tatpadam. When one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything. The sun lights up everything in the daytime. You just become a pure devotee, that's all. And then you'll have perfect knowledge of everything. You'll see God face to face. You'll see Krishna with everything, everything within Krishna. You'll have perfect knowledge of everything. There won't be any doubt. And until that time, well, it's a gamble. Prabhupada said, if you want to gamble, then give your life to Krishna. You see, the odds are pretty good, I can tell you. Actually, the odds are 100%. If you're skeptical about this Krishna consciousness, then just do it as a gamble. It's better than the other game. Actually, it's a perfect. The odds are perfect. I guarantee you, you will. If you follow this process, you will see Krishna face to face in due course of time. All he'll answer all of your questions, all of your doubts will be erased. Well, did somebody, did it really to get tampered along the way between Veda Vyas and Rupa Goswami? Did Madhavendra Puri twist it, or did Ishvara Puri twist it a little bit? Or, you know, did Narottam bend the message this way a little bit, or Vishwanath Chakra? If you simply dive deeply into the following these instructions of Srila Prabhupada, and you'll see that every one of these acharyas is absolutely flawless, and they pass this message down without the least, without even the slightest degree of tampering with the message. It's absolutely pure, pristine, as it was when Arjuna heard it on the chariot. So we thank you all very much for so kindly hearing these messages coming from His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, which I've simply tried to pass on to you as a humble servant. Now kindly bless me that I can be Krishna conscious. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Antarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.